We're live and we're local. This is a Juno Afternoon on Thursday, June 28th, 2018. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and on today's show, Juno Family Promise will tell us all about Fabulous Family Fun Day coming up this weekend. We'll get our weekly update on Juno Public Library activities, and we'll hear about the next Author's Talk by Daniel Lee Henry. We'll also find out all about this weekend's arts and culture activities with Nancy DeCherney on Artsa. Those interviews, national native news, bird note, music, and more coming up right here on a Juno Afternoon. Quick look at weather. There's a 30% chance of rain mainly after 4 p.m. today, mostly cloudy with a high near 60. Tonight, rain mainly after 7, lows around 51 degrees. National native news is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Advocates say work is finally beginning in Washington state to address missing and murdered indigenous women and girls. Earlier this year, a bill was signed into law in the state to help identify missing Native American women. Advocate Patricia Whitefoot knows firsthand about the impact on families. Her sister is missing. Whitefoot says for a long time, families have been silently coping with the issue and often receive little assistance or response.
You know, she's been missing and there's not going to be any resolution. And I know I'm not the only one, but there are other family members who have missing family members, and that resolution takes may never be resolved in your lifetime, but it's one I think that it's important we give voice to that, and we can't allow that our women who've been missing to go unnoticed and to allow to provide that kind of support that's needed amongst the families.
Carolyn DeFord Eden, also an advocate, says her mother went missing 18 years ago. She says families are often left with many challenges.
I wanted to address the need to break down those jurisdictional challenges, to provide services to families, to give them something to go on. You get a missing persons report number, if you're lucky, and that's it. So there's no direction. You don't know what to do. You don't get a poster. There's no coping or support system in those situations. And so for so many of our families, after a week or so of somebody going missing, the rest of the world goes on business as usual. And for our families who are dealing with ambiguous loss, the world is stopped. And we are right there for a very, very long time.
Both advocates shared their stories with state lawmakers. The bill requires the state patrol to work with law enforcement, tribes, Native organizations, and the governor's office of Indian Affairs on reporting and identifying missing Native women throughout Washington. Whitefoot and DeFord Eden joined other advocates across Indian country this week at the Women Are Sacred Conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Many attendees wore red Wednesday in an effort to raise awareness about missing and murdered indigenous women and girls. Last year, Washington State Supreme Court granted the Yakima Nation the right to transport goods and services across state lines without taxation. Attorneys and tribal members called it a landmark case for tribal sovereignty. Now the U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to review it. Emily Schwing reports.
In 2013, Washington's Department of Licensing demanded $3.6 million in taxes and fees from a Yakima Nation fuel company, so the two parties went to court. A member of the Yakima Nation transported fuel across the Oregon-Washington border for sale at the Cougar Den, a gas station on the tribe's reservation. He said a unique travel clause in a treaty signed with the U.S. government in 1855 exempted him from state taxes. Only two other tribal treaties in the Northwest expressly outline the right to travel. This fall, the High Court will consider whether the treaty allows tribal members to avoid state taxes when they transport goods on public highways. Five other states filed friend of the court briefs in favor of Washington's petition for review. I'm Emily Schwing reporting.
A team at Northern Arizona University was recently awarded more than $2 million by the National Institutes of Health to train Native students and address tribal health and environmental issues. Students across science, technology, engineering, and math fields will conduct 2 years of research on tribal lands, including Navajo, Hopi, and Yavapai Apache. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by New Mexico Community Capital, helping make the impossible possible with tools for success for emerging Native American enterprises, including microlending available for early-stage Native-owned businesses. Information at neirprogram.org. Support by BNSF Railway, moving our economy for over 165 years. Our vision is to operate injury and accident-free with safety programs, training, and technology. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. My first guests today are Lisa Lindemann and Pat McClure. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're both here representing Family Promise of Juno, and you're here to talk about Family Fun Day this weekend, which we'll get into.
Fabulous Family Fun Day.
Fabulous Family Fun
yes,
Day.
Yes,
thanks
yes.
for correcting me. I don't want to underplay it. But before we get into all that, I just wanted to ask a few questions about Family Promise in Juno. What do you guys do? What's your role in our community?
Our role in our community is to provide housing for children and their families who are experiencing homelessness.
That's a big job.
It is. And we have a wonderful executive director, Shannon Fisher, and she will do an intake on the families who are applying. And then if the boxes are all checked, then folks are welcome to come. They will be provided shelter, food, and services to help them go through the red tape and all the hoops. This is a community-wide service. So on each Sunday, the families are brought to a local congregation where they are given shelter for a week. And then the following Sunday, they are moved to a different congregation. So, for instance, they might go from Northern Light United Church to Shepherd of the Valley to St. Brendan's to Holy Trinity to the Salvation Army to Resurrection Lutheran. So they each week they are located in a different congregation. And then there's a variety of congregations who provide support services, those meals that are they share with the families, prepare and share with the families, and then they spend the night volunteers. So this is a organization that is dependent on volunteers. It's definitely many hands make for light work.
Yeah, and we have the offices at Chapel by the Lake. They provide space for our offices in a day center where families can spend time and where parents, the adults, can search for jobs and get financial help, advice, I'd say budgeting advice. All with the goal of getting them into permanent housing.
And thanks very much to the generosity of Chapel by the Lake, because they also provide laundry facilities and showers and lockers so folks can store their stuff and then do what needs to be done. So right now I think we have a handful of children all under the age of two. It's a lot of laundry.
I can imagine. So how long have you been up and running as a resource and organization?
We've just finished our first year of operation at the end of April, and
we got nine
families graduated into housing, and volunteers provided over 2,000 bed nights and over 5,000 meals. So it's the volunteer base is very important to the effective running of our program. We've got over 300 volunteers who have been trained in order to interact with the families, with our guests. Folks need to go through about an hour and a half of training.
And the next one will be on July 9th, 6:30 to 8 o'clock at Chapel by the Lake.
Right.
This is training you need to undergo to become a volunteer
Correct.
Family.
Yes. Correct. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the benefits of the program as well. Not only are the children and their families gaining assistance towards sustainable housing, but also a portion of Juno population is being educated about a different side of homelessness, that it's not necessarily the folks that you might encounter walking through parts of town, but these are, as I said, children and their families who are experiencing homelessness.
Yeah.
How large is the need for sheltering families in Juno?
Well, currently, there is a need, okay, a big need. And currently about 170 students in the Juneau School District are experiencing homelessness. So right there, that's a pretty high number.
That's more than I was expecting.
Kids.
Mm-hmm. And that's children that you can count in school. As I said, right now we have a handful who are preschool and infants, and those wouldn't get counted in the school district numbers.
Right.
Wow. Well, graduating 9 families in the last year into housing, that's a huge success.
It is. Yes. It is. And if I may, there was one little guy, and we were moving them into their apartment, and he bumped into a schoolmate in the hall of this apartment complex, and he ran into his mom and said, "Can my friend come to our house?" And I thought, well, Ray, you just swallow the lump in my throat and let's move your stuff in, buddy, so your friend can come to your house.
Right.
That those are, you know, the kids who for the first time have a bed. You know, those are things that are just keep you going. Keep you going.
Right.
Keep you going.
Yes, I'm sure moments like that make it all so mm-hmm. feel so mm-hmm. rewarding. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure you guys have worked very hard over the last year.
Definitely. Many.
And so now Juneau Family Promise is coordinating Family Fun Day. Fabulous.
Fabulous.
Family Fun Day.
Good woman.
So tell us about that. How did your year of getting organized culminate in the very first, the inaugural Fabulous Family Fun Day?
One of the goals of the Fabulous Family Fun Day, in addition to having fun, is to let folks know about Family Promise of Juneau. So what a better way than to involve Juneau families in celebrating. So we will have a carnival of sorts at Diamond Park Fieldhouse, 10 a.m. to noon this Saturday. There's an entrance fee for $5, you get a pass that gives you 5 tickets. So in addition to shaved ice and mini golf, face painting, giant bouncy house, not just a bouncy house, a giant bouncy house. There are carnival games, a photo booth, bubbles, snacks, jump rope, the Daughters of the New Moon belly dancing, and some Tlingit and Haida dancers. The public library is there. Zach Gordon is there. It's a community event to celebrate families.
Sounds good. Live entertainment.
Live entertainment. Live entertainment.
And food. I always like to hear there's mm-hmm. food. so what other organizations are involved in helping you get this, helping you put this on?
McDonald's very kindly has donated stuff to drink and some prizes. Fish and Game, the Girl Scouts have donated cookies for prizes. We have one-time pool passes from CBJ, which was wonderful to have those as well.
And Subway donated a gift card as a prize. And we've got some requests still outstanding for donations for prizes.
The Jack, I just went over there and filled the back of the car with some games. The hula hoops looked really big to me, so I don't know who's going to hula hoop them. But
when they're bigger, they're easier.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll take your word on that.
Are you guys excited about it? Are you looking forward to it?
You know, the word fabulous kind of just does it for me. And so the face painting and the photo booth in and of itself, I look forward to having my face painted and then hamming it up in the photo booth. That'll be fun.
There should be a lot of energy out there, and hopefully we'll get the name Family Promise out there. When we mention Family Promise, sometimes people go, "What's that?" So we give mm-hmm. the spiel on what our organization is. But with only 1 year under our belt, this is a good time to get our name out there, show people, tell them what we're about, sign up some more volunteers. Mm-hmm. We need volunteers. And then provide an event where families can have fun together. That's one of our big goals.
For instance, when I contacted the Daughters of the New Moon, and their response was, what's Family Promise? I haven't heard of you. So once I explained what the program was, they couldn't jump in fast enough to say that we would love to support this organization, and we're there. So I think the more people know, the more support the community will provide.
If there's a family listening right now who feels like they need your services, what's the first thing they should do?
We have a webpage, Family Promise of Juneau, and we also have a Facebook page. The phone number, which is 586-0160 is the number I have here. They can call and arrange for an intake interview with Shannon Fisher, who's our executive director.
Great. Thank you for that. I took down that number as well. So if anybody didn't catch it, they can contact KTOO. Mm-hmm. Well, this is great news. I'm really excited for you guys, and I'm excited to get to put on this event. It sounds like it's going to be fabulous and very fun. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else going on with Juno Family Promise that you'd like to talk about while you're here? Family Promise of Juno.
Well, we've mentioned the volunteer training, but if there's anyone out there who has the time or the inclination to become a volunteer with our organization, please attend the July 9th volunteer training. It's an hour and a half. And to volunteer with Family Promise, it really doesn't take that much of a person's time. Each congregation hosts maybe
four times a year.
So if you sign up to cook a meal, it could be one time a year or four times a year. And an overnight host spends the night there from 8 o'clock to about 6:30 in the morning, but that could be one or four times a year. That's not a whole lot of time, but there's a huge benefit to the guests. And then we volunteers benefit from working with Family Promise.
And where will that training take place?
Chapel by the Lake, July 9th, Chapel by the Lake, 6:30 to 8 o'clock. And Shannon Fisher, our executive director, who is incredibly good, we'll give that training, and she does it about once a month.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Low effort, high impact.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Type of volunteer
mm-hmm.
service.
Exactly.
Yes, yes.
Exactly.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Lisa Lindemann and Pat McClear from Family Promise of Juno, all about Family Promise and Family Fun Day, which is happening this Saturday, June 30th at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse from 10 a.m. to noon. Lisa, Pat, is there anything else you'd like to add today?
I'm definitely very appreciative of the opportunity to talk about our fabulous Family Fun Day. And I said that without messing it up. So
better than I did.
And so I thank you for the opportunity.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you both for being here.
Somebody that just loves to learn, and another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. Mom loves the both of them. You see, it's in the blood. Both kids are good and bound. Blood's thicker than the mud. It's a family affair.
Support for programming on this station comes from listeners like you and from Clinton Farron and the Boogie Brown Band, live in Juneau, Tuesday, July 3rd at Pier 49. Details at pier49alaska.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm here with my next guest, Kate Inge. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Kate, you're here representing the Juno Public Library. What is your role there?
So I'm the grants and marketing coordinator with the public library, and I'm here to talk about various things that are happening in the next week.
Yeah, and we're happy to announce that you'll be here every week on Thursdays to provide our listeners with an update on library activities. So that's exciting.
Yeah, that is exciting because we have a lot to talk about. We have a lot of things happening over the summer.
Great, yeah, and that'll be through the summer, and then after that, we don't know. Juno Afternoon is just operating on a summer schedule for now, and then the real producer gets back. Back in business. But I'm excited to be talking to you every Thursday till further notice. Okay, so what are some of the things you'd like to talk about today?
Well, I think the big one to talk about is happening tonight. We have a drag queen story time that starts at 5:30 at the Douglas Public Library. It's open to all, and it's our third of the drag queen story time. We've had two before, and they've been pretty popular. And
yeah, you get good turnout for those.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I think they're going to be reading some stories. They're going to do like a little kid-friendly drag show just to kind of get things going, and then they're going to have a dance party. So kids can come, hear some stories, and then they can dance.
Do you have more than one storybook reader?
Yeah, I think they have a couple, and I think they're being dressed. I think it's like a Disney princess theme tonight. Like, so they're going to be dressed up as princesses, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Wow, which princesses will be represented? Do you know? Can you tell us?
It looked like there might be one from, I don't know if I can say on air, but like it looked like it was a fairly recent film that had like a snowman and two sisters and yeah.
No, I don't think you're giving away too much with that one. Well, that sounds like a great time. And do you know what stories they'll be reading? What books?
I'm not sure what stories, but they're the stories that we kind of they read at all the other story times. So like Wheels on the Bus and now I'm blanking on what kind of stories, but I think all the usual suspects that you find at a story time, like
some the
ones
the classics.
That the kids like. Yeah, the classics, the ones that the kids like. It's this drag queen story time is like part of like a national like program that's happening throughout the country. So they have like the drag queens get trained by our like youth services staff, and then who have like a selection of books that they read, and then they can, practice and then read stories to the kids.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be quite the production and a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So everybody who's listening, 5:30 tonight at the Douglas Library.
Yeah, Douglas Library.
Bring your kiddos for drag queen story time.
Yep.
Okay, what's next?
So next, I think you just had two people from the Family Promise organization, and the library is also going to be at their Family Fun Festival.
Fabulous Family Fun.
Fabulous Family, yeah. And we're going to have a table there as well, and we'll be bringing our computers so we'll be able to check out books. We're also going to have some stickers and some crafts for kids. So if you come by, you can maybe check out a book, or at least the kids can get some stickers and crafts. And
that sounds nice.
Yeah, fun, because we want to help out with families.
So you're going to bring a selection of kids' books
so
and they can check them out right there.
Yep.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah.
What sort of craft items will you have?
I think it will be, I don't know, like whatever is easiest for youth services staff to kind of like bring around, like whatever's mobile. So we've been doing a lot of blocks this summer. We're doing a story time with blocks every Wednesday at the downtown library. So it's probably going to be something that's easy for kids to do, easily portable, not going to make too much of a mess because I know how facilities like to stay away from lots of glitter and glue and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, Fabulous Family Fun Day sounds like it's a great event for a great cause. So I'm happy to hear that the library is getting involved as well.
Yeah.
Okay. And then finally, 4th of July things to address.
Yeah. So 4th of July is coming up, and we want everybody to know that the public libraries are going to be closing early on Tuesday the 3rd. All three branches are going to be closing at 5 o'clock. will all be closed for the 4th of July holiday, and then we reopen regular hours on Thursday. Yeah.
And if you have a book that's due the 4th, what's going
to
happen?
So, yeah, that's a good thing to point out. We are going to be locking the book drops at the Douglas Library and the Downtown Library. So we'll be locking them at 5 on Tuesday and then unlocking them Thursday morning. So you can wait until Thursday and put them in the book drop, and we'll check everything in like it was returned on Tuesday, or you can put it in the Valley book drop.
You know, the Juneau Police Department was here yesterday, and they were talking about 3rd and 4th of July general safety and deployment. They didn't mention that the book drops were in danger targeted.
Drops, yeah, the book drops can be in danger. I think each one kind of looks like those bear-proof garbage cans that we have lying around, and I think they're like big and silver and look kind of like a garbage can, so people can just pull open and then can accidentally put things in there. And so we want to just make sure everything stays clean and safe and doesn't get all weird and sticky over the holiday.
It's almost like the town is preparing for an attack or something on the 3rd and the 4th of July, batten down the hatches.
Everybody's getting prepared for the fireworks on like Tuesday night. Just everybody's getting prepared.
All right. So if you have a book due on the 4th of July, try to get it in by the 3rd of July before they lock the book drop. So what time do those lock again?
I think at closure, so at 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock on July 3rd. Or you can bring it back on July 5th when they reopen.
Yep.
And that's on the Downtown and Douglas Library locations. All right. Kate, that's everything on my list. What else did you want to talk about today?
I think that's everything on our list, because I think when I come back next week, there's going to be more events happening next weekend. And so then I want to highlight those and just keep everybody abreast of what's going on at the libraries.
Great. Yep. We don't want to give too much away because you'll be back next week.
I'll be back. Yep.
All right. Well, thanks for being here, Kate Inge from Juneau Public Libraries. And tune in next week on Thursday for the next update from Kate and Juneau Public Libraries. Thanks for being here.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Drawn to that sort of library magic, whispering through the dusty aisles, watching all the thinkers read, trying to keep a grown man quiet. It's like pulling teeth on a winter's eve, cracks and bowls in unfamiliar roads. I'm on this one to find out. As you guess, and brother Charette's can't stay up, even the cloud of eyes. Listening to my every move, just trying to survive. Self-imposed adventure that selfishness drives. I can barely keep my head above the blue, trying to keep it off me and you. But I can see the sunshine's rays gleaming through the clear water, telling me God, I've been for this chapter's right. There will always be better days. There will always be better days. Making music is what we do. Trying to weave the patterns for me and you. Trying to make the grasses breathe and a grown man cry. Truth in life is where I glean. Tangled up in a funnel's wind. Trying to come out walking. Understand it's beyond me talking, trying to come out walking. Understand it's beyond me talking. I can see the sunshine's rays gleaming through the clear water, telling me God, I've been for this chapter's read. There will always be better days. There will always be better days. Sought after like a holiday. Being home is my vacation. Postcard dreams of a full-size bed. Quit the band one too many times. Serious enough to get a rest. Get up in the next morning for another drive. That's a promise, the best advice we ever received is for you and me to stay together. It's easy to begin and hard to end. Glad to go through it all with you as a friend.
sunshine's rays gleaming through the clear water. Telling me you gotta hop in for this chapter's ride. There'll always be better days. There will always be better days. There will always be better days.
Jazz and Classics presents legendary singer and songwriter Arlo Guthrie and family in Juneau, June 29th. Famous for Alice's Restaurant, Arlo's back with Sara Lee and Abe Guthrie and his regeneration tour with Songs of Insight and Wit at Centennial Hall, 7:30. Tickets at Hearthside, The Jack, and jazzandclassics.org. Bring a new generation to the regeneration tour when Arlo Guthrie comes to Juneau, June 29th.
Good morning, America.
You're tuned in to a Juneau Afternoon. It's just about 29 minutes to the top of the hour. And my next guest here is Daniel Lee Henry. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
And Claire Imamura is also here from the State Library, Archives, and Museum.
Yeah, thanks, Shelley.
Thanks for being here and for scheduling this interview with our author, Daniel Lee Henry. You've got a new book out. Would you please tell us what it's called?
It's called Across the Shaman's River, John Muir, the Tlingit Stronghold, and the Opening of the North.
And what is it about?
It's about 302 pages.
Good one.
It's kind of in the title there, but essentially, I lived in Haines for 32 years in the Skagway area and that sort of thing. And it is about early American, European explorers, adventurers, people coming up to the Upperland Canal and the way that the Tlingit residents met them and how they kind of organized and how they talked to each other. And it kind of leads up to John Muir, and he's kind of the main non-native character there.
And you mentioned that this book is about one of Alaska's last Native American strongholds. What community is that, or where is that located?
Yeah, well, it kind of reveals itself through the story. But essentially, by 1879, which was John Muir's first canoe trip up there when he met the people on the Northern Lynn Canal, most Native Americans on the continent had been moved to a reservation, had been conquered by military, including many of the, Tlingit communities, even south of the Lynn Canal. They had been meeting white people and that sort of thing. But during all that time, when white folks had been going up into the upper Lynn Canal, they had been escorted out primarily. They were not allowed to land or even, build a home or anything like that. They were threatened. And so that area up there, the Chilkat and Chilkoot people were very strict about who could, go into that area with or without permission. And so they essentially had yet to see a missionary. They were not conquered militarily. And so they were still pretty much intact as they were their original culture.
And some of the resources you drew on for this book included unpublished journals by John Muir. How did you access those?
Well, you can get them right now online if you want to.
Oh, yeah?
But starting in 1991, I started going to the John Muir Archives in Stockton, California at University of the Pacific. And I think I made about six visits there over 25 years or so. And there were, early on, and Claire would be interested in this, it kind of shows the evolution of libraries and archives. Early on, they would just bring out all his journals and lay them all out and stack them all up. And I would put on my gloves and then I'd just go through the journals and because they weren't copied digitally or anything else like that.
And they were the originals?
And they were the originals. And now the last few years I've gone in there and you have to have some special dispensation to have the originals in your hand. But for any listeners who are interested, you can access all of those journals online. Just go to University of the Pacific, the John Muir Archives, and you can find it all there.
And then for the another resource that you drew on for the book was interviews with 16 Tlingit elders.
Yeah.
What did you learn from them?
Oh, gosh. I learned to be patient, I think, was probably the big thing. And I learned a lot about respect as well. you know, in 82, 83, when I first came to Haynes, I had finished up a master's thesis on the rhetoric of American land use conflict. And a big part of that had been John Muir and kind of establishing his way of talking to people, his rhetoric. And so I knew that he had come to the Upper Lynn Canal. So I started asking some of the elders up there that I was working with about John Muir. And it was not as easy as, let me ask you a question, let me hear your answer. The answers sometimes took years to divine, really, and come out, because I think, you know, people like Austin Hammond and George Lewis and some of the elders who are no longer with us, they didn't want to just give me a straight answer and say, okay, go on your way. They wanted to set up the context. And sometimes the context took days, weeks, months, years to really give all the information there. So it was a long process, a lot of trust building.
Your book asks and perhaps attempts to answer some thought-provoking questions. So I want to talk about a couple of those.
Yeah, sure.
What was Muir's stance on Alaska Natives? Did he advocate for, you know, leaving them to themselves to live their lives, or did he promote assimilation?
Well, that's one of the questions I'm working at all the way through the book. And I'll just say this, that it follows John Muir's development of his attitude about Native Americans really from the very beginning. He was as a young man in Scotland, even a young boy. And by the time in 1879, by the time he was coming to Alaska, his view about Native Americans was pretty much the same as mainstream Americans. He had prejudice. Had racist ideas. He referred to, you know, Native Americans as dirty or heathens or whatnot. And so and largely that came from his, I think, disappointment that they were no longer, as he saw, children of nature. They had been they're brainwashed by missionaries or, you know, other kinds of people who had come in. And so he was really disappointed and generally avoided Native Americans. When he came up to Alaska, however, when he arrived in Wrangell in July of 1879, within a couple of weeks, he was amazed how ecologically intact the Tlingit people were. And they were willing to talk to him, explain what they were doing. He was especially touched by the consideration that was shown within families and how children were treated. And he wrote in his journal about 12 days after he arrived in Wrangell, he said, Uncle Sam has no better citizens, white, black, brown, or otherwise, than the Tlingit Indian. So he had completely changed his mind about Native Americans after a couple of weeks with the Tlingits in Wrangell.
That's very interesting. And
and I'll just, to answer your question a little bit further, Shelley, nonetheless, he still was an agent of manifest destiny, you know, and so he carried along with him all that a Caucasian man would come up here and saw that he could offer Native Americans more advantages than what they already had, you know, which was part of that manifest destiny.
And which kind of segues into my next question.
Yeah.
Did Muir, who some have referred to as the grandfather of American environmentalism, launch the Klondike Gold Rush?
Well, that's something that comes up in the book as well. And, you know, I'm trying to crystallize a lot of the book into just a simple answer. But essentially, after his time in Southeast Alaska, when he left, the ship took him first to Portland, Oregon. And when he arrived in Portland in January of 1880, he had six different speech events that he was going to be giving in Portland. And at each one of those, he talked about Alaska and the riches that could be in Alaska. And in fact, he mentioned in one of the talks, he had a blackboard drawn out with all of the West Coast on it. And he showed a connection between the gold in Sutter's Mill in Central California leading all the way up into the Yukon. And he said, now essentially, the hostile natives have been mollified, and the hills are open to the prospectors to do as they will. And people couldn't even sit in their seats. As soon as he began to show that connection between Sutter's Mill and the Yukon, as soon as he was talking about the gates were now open to the north, people were leaving the rooms even during his speeches. They were just, get me to Alaska as soon as possible. Now, that was 19 years before the peak of the Klondike Gold Rush. But it was that year, 1880, when the U.S. Army sent over their first group of people over the Klondike Trail, the Chilkoot Trail, and then every year it expanded. You know, there was maybe 50 people the first year, 100 people, 200 kept going until there was 40,000 people or up to 40,000 people that in 1898.
Have you yourself ever hiked the Chilkoot Trail?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love it. It's a social time. It's not necessarily a wilderness. It's a great time to meet people.
When you think about all that they packed up and hauled over up and over the pass, really blows your mind.
It's really incredible.
So if you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Daniel Lee Henry, author of the book Across the Shaman's River, John Muir, The Tlingit Stronghold, and The Opening of the North, University of Alaska Press. You're in Juneau today for an author's talk at the Father Andrew P. K. Cacheveroff State Library Archives and Museums. A lot of words. That's tonight at 5:30. What will you be covering in your talk tonight?
Well, it's a slideshow talk, and so there's a lot of slides of, different things relating to the book. I do talk initially about some of my informants because I had relationships with a number of Tlingit elders in the Haines area, Haines and Klukwan, and so I want to make sure that I honor those four folks for really adding to the depth of this. And then we get into the story itself, John Muir and some of the early Tlingit reactions to white people coming up into Southeast Alaska, and then more on the John Muir level. I also tonight, I do want to add I've spoken about this several times in Alaska and Oregon and Washington, but this will be the first time that I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about the great eclipse of 1869, because last night I was wandering around downtown Juneau and, of course, saw the statue of William Henry Seward, and he had a lot to do with the eclipse of 1869, and the Chilkat and Chilkoot people began to form their attitudes about the Americans as opposed to the Russians or the British or whoever, and begin to come closer to America because of that. So I'll mention the Seward and the eclipse as well.
Is it a literal eclipse?
It was a full-on eclipse.
And, solar?
Solar eclipse, yeah. And George Davidson, who was the director of the Coastal Survey at that time from San Francisco, he actually was charged by Congress before they were going to buy Alaska. He came up to survey it. And when he came up to survey, he put survey marker number one for the entire West Coast, which went all the way down to, below San Diego. And he put the number one survey marker on Pyramid Island, which is that little island right at the mouth of Chilkat River. And then when he was measuring things, he had his theodolite out there and whatnot, he determined that in 2 years, Klukwan would be the best northern spot to see an eclipse that was going to stretch all the way across North America. And so the Coastal Survey had many surveyors all the way over to the East Coast, and it was a total eclipse, but Klukwan would be the best northern place to see that. And so he planned 2 years later, 1869, to go up and do that. And it just so happened that William Henry Seward was in Alaska at the time, and he had a little invitation. He saw a note to him in Sitka saying, oh, I'm up in Klukwan. Drop by if you'd like. And so Seward went up there. And it's quite a story.
Fascinating stuff.
Little side note there. But
Yeah. Cool. Well, it should be a great talk tonight, and you will also be signing your books at the store at the APK on Friday. That's the 29th from 2 to 5 p.m. When did this book come out?
December of 2017.
Okay, so not too long.
Yeah.
Well, what do you hope people will learn from the book?
Well, I think it uncovers kind of a new way of seeing let's put it this way. It answers a lot of questions that I know people have been asking for years and years about. What did John Muir have to do with things up here? I mean, of course, he was interested in glaciers and, you know, that sort of thing, so that's significant. But what other elements were involved with John Muir and the people who were up here? I know that among Tlingit people, sometimes there's animosity or respect or something in between about John Muir. And I tried to answer some of those questions because as a teacher in Haines for years and years, you know, I had been asking my students and parents and Tlingit elders, you know, what do you think about John Muir? And so I think that audience members are going to gather some of the information that came out of their answers to me relating to this book. And also, you know, the Chilkat and Chilkoot Tlingit people are quite significant folks in Southeast Alaska and never had a full ethnography written about them because for one reason or another, anthropologists would go up there and then be turned around for some reason or another. And so I wanted to reveal some information early about Chilkat and Chilkoot people as well. So there's new information there, as you mentioned, that also comes from the elders.
Yeah, I'm glad you included their perspective in your book.
Yeah, and I'll just say, Shelley, also that, you know, I read a lot of Native American histories, and the sad thing that I found about most Native American histories that are in print today is that they are mostly books about battles and about death and about loss. And this book is, whereas, you know, these elements are part of it, this book is about, is a rhetorical history. I'm a rhetorician. So a rhetorical history is a history of how people talk to each other and try to persuade each other. And so this book's emphasis is on cross-cultural persuasion between non-natives and the native people of Southeast Alaska, most importantly.
Well, thank you very much for joining me today. I really enjoyed hearing about your book. I think that's a really good teaser for both the talk tonight and also for folks who are looking to buy a copy of the book and get it signed by you on Friday. Claire Imamura, representing the State Libraries, Archives, and Museum, is also here today. Is there anything else happening with over there that you'd like to talk about or promote while you're here?
Well, next week for First Friday, we're having Brittany Viz. She's a curator from the Maritime Museum of British Columbia, and that's the museum that started the Princess Sophia exhibit that we have up right now. So she's going to kind of take us a little deeper inside of that exhibit and talk about some of the individual stories of people who were on board and the aftermath of the wreck, which includes court proceedings and the recovery efforts, which is really significant to this community, which supplied the main recoverers after that shipwreck. So she'll be here first Friday in July at 6 p.m.
Terrific. And I believe somebody is also coming on the show to talk about a plaque that's being dedicated out at Eagle Beach. So you can tune into a Juno afternoon and hear more about that. All right. Daniel Lee Henry, Claire Imamura, anything else you'd like to add while you're here?
I hope to see people out there tonight at 5:30 at the museum, and I can't wait to meet you.
Thanks, Shelley.
Yes. Thanks so much.
Thank you both for being here.
How to get ahead when you're sent tasteless lead sitting on our tongues, and then we have to worry more about the ones we love. When you see the smoke is fire, when you see the smoke is fire, when you see the smoke is fire, when you see the smoke is fire.
This is Bird Note. Watch any backyard bird and you are watching an acrobat at work. A robin zooms across your field of vision and reaching a tree appears to go from full-out flight to a dead stop in the wink of an eye. How come it doesn't crash? Well, there's several things that are happening at once. Just before it lands, the robin raises the angle of its wings higher and higher from the horizontal. This slows it down and reduces lift. And the tail can also be fanned and held down, adding to the drag at the instant before the bird clamps its feet to the perch. And hawks. At high speed, a hawk dives to a bit below where it wants to perch, then pulls into a steep climb, slowing its momentum just in time. While ducks, landing on a pond, use a combination of raised wings and a bit of hydroplaning, like water skiing on their wide, webbed feet. Birds are often admired and envied for possessing the miracle of flight. But breaking just in time, it's a bit of a miracle in itself. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
KTOO would like to say thanks to everyone who contributed this fiscal year. Because of your support, we are able to bring you the best in community radio and NPR. In this month alone, more than $30,000 has come in from several hundred of you, leaving less than $10,000 to go by June 30th. If you meant to join as a new member or renew, you can still do so at ktoo.org. Again, a big thank you goes to each of you who gives for making KTOO possible.
You're tuned into A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my final guest today is the wonderful Nancy DeCherney from The Jack, here to tell us all about the weekend's arts and culture happenings with Arts Up.
Many things to do, of course. I think starting tonight at 5, actually, you could go down to the Alaska and join the Joe Gorilla Mayor campaign kickoff.
What's going on with that? Say more about that.
Joe Gorilla is running for mayor. That's all I need to say.
Again, right? Because yes. he had a bid in the past.
I think he does, yeah. But he's at COPA at 2 p.m., so we've missed that. But at 5 p.m., he's at the Alaskan. So check it out. And you were just talking with the author who's going to be over at the State Museum. Sounds like a fascinating talk and a fascinating topic.
I agree.
Yeah. Daniel Lee Henry. Across the Shaman's River, John Muir, the Tlingit Stronghold, and the Opening of the North. Sounds like pretty fascinating. That's from 5:30 till 7. At 6:30, the Alaska Institute for Justice Education at the Northern Lights United Church. This is a community action meeting focused on ending the incarceration of children who are migrants and or asylum seekers. There will be some informational briefing on recent federal policy on this subject. And a person who's been actually doing some work on the ground there will be there to talk about what she saw and all that sort of stuff. So it's free. Come on down. Get informed on this really important topic. From 6:30 to 7:30, you could also do pub theology over at, I think that is at the, they didn't put where it is, but I know where it is. I can get there. Go up South Franklin or North Franklin Street. It's that queer place. Is
it Devil's Club?
No, is the other one up the hill.
Barnaby's?
Mm-hmm, there you go.
Pub Theology.
They go, yeah, I think you have to bring your own chair. And then they have topics. And I never know what the topics are. I wish they would say. But okay. Anyway, also from 6:30 to 7:30, if you happen to be out in the valley, you can think like a computer at the Mendenhall Public Library, ages 8 to adult. On Friday is when everything gets very exciting. We have the summer block party over at the Jack, and even though it's going to be a real sunny day, it's going to be in the Jack. We'll have the big doors open. Things will be happening outside. That's from 5:30 to 7. It's a fundraiser for the new Jack project, and it's Susu and the Prophets.
Yay!
It's going to be really fun. There's a beer garden. There's vendors. There's family activities. It'll all be exciting, and that ends at 7, which is good because at 7:30, it's the Arlo Guthrie Regeneration Tour. So you can go from one to the other. It's a full night. Absolutely. But so stop in. Come on down. See all the razzle-dazzle that's going on. Also, from 8 to 10, there's a Friday night concert series over at the Flight Deck, and you can find out who's playing by checking their website. You can go to our website, jahc.org, or your website, ktoo.org, and get all the details on these things, website links and stuff. Saturday morning.
Sorry, do you know what time the live music starts at the Flight Deck?
8.
Thanks.
Okay, so you have a time to get some food, too, if you need to. But I think the food trucks will be open, so you could be doing that, too.
Oh, you won't go hungry.
No, things will happen. Saturday morning, 9 to noon, Cops on Top. Meet at the Basin Road and climb Mount Roberts. You can, if you don't want to climb, you can take the tram and meet everybody at the top. This is an effort to project a positive image of law enforcement officers to honor and raise awareness for officers who've been killed while protecting and serving their companies, their communities. Everybody's welcome. You can find them on Facebook. So,
this is JPD,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to be
hiking
up the hiking up to the tram from Basin Road.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway, and also, if you don't feel like hiking Mount Roberts, you could go out to the Eagle Beach Relay Race. It's a four-person, two-person, and solo categories, four legs, each varying length. Everybody must be a participant of the Freewheelers or join prior to the race. Rules must be followed. There will be a potluck at the end. Register at Cycle Alaska or email John at jpm@gci.net. And they need volunteers, too, so if you don't feel like running or racing or whatever, you can do the volunteer thing. From 10 to 11 at Capitol School Park, Families Belong Together Rally, marches and rallies to be held nationwide. So this is in conjunction with those regarding the separation of children from their families and the detention of families. Ernestine Hayes and Tasha Elliard will be speaking. The League of Women Voters will be there to provide stuff so you get registered to vote. It's a nonpartisan event. It's a fundraiser for the Alaska Institute for Justice. Family Promise.
Time for one more, maybe.
Okay, well, let's not miss the Taku Winds and Juno Volunteer Marching Band on the 4th of July. They are going to be, and you know, everything starts on the 3rd. There's stuff that starts on the 3rd so that you can have the fireworks. So go to the website and get the details. We're all going to have fun. Bye.
Thanks, Nancy.
Okay.
Thanks for tuning in today. On tomorrow's show, Ben Brown hosts, Lisa Ricci will be here to talk about family support group for loved ones struggling with addiction and get details from Maud Carousel about their upcoming Boylesque performances in Juneau. We'll also hear about Community Appreciation Day from Above and Beyond Alaska. If you'd like to be on a Juneau afternoon, go to ktoo.org and click Contact Us. Today's show will be available on demand online at ktoo.org. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juneau afternoon. Have a great Juneau evening.